Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Today on Advanced, how hearing can be transformed into sight. Everyone, welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom for today, April 20th. We're continuing our science article today, Seeing Without Sight. So back in the studio with you, we have myself, Naomi, as well as
Bill
and
Amanda.
Welcome back, everyone. So yesterday we started this really fascinating topic by discussing what, Amanda?
We learned that people blind from birth have a new hope in being able to see.
Okay, we're referring particularly to this one study that has changed some people's ideas about what exactly goes on in our brains.
Yes, it has actually called into question or actually created some doubts about a long-held belief, long-standing belief. This study, it was done at the Safra Center for Brain Science at Hebrew University in Israel, and what is called into question is the longstanding belief that, well, once you lose sight, once you don't have sight, that's it. Forget it. You never will.
Right.
Well, this study is saying, might be possible to create sight.
Right. So the most interesting thing that I learned yesterday is that this idea that when you lose one sense, your other senses become more acute, more carefully developed, maybe kind of stronger. I thought that was just sort of something that just happened because we aren't as careful with the senses that we have when we have all five of them. You know, you just focus a little more or something. But actually, something changes in your brain.
Right. We see that once your brain picks up that this area is not able to be used anymore, it reassigns. We learned that it reassigns the duties to another part to another sensory area.
So in other words, your brain is a really good manager. It pays careful attention to what you're using it for and what you're not, which I think is interesting as well, just in considering how we spend our time, where if our brains don't get used for certain things, that power might be distributed elsewhere. It's quite interesting.
This is not just a conscious effort on the part of the person with the disability. As we see in the last sentence from yesterday, the specialized regions of the brain in which input is received from, well, those areas then are reassigned to other duties. There is actually a biochemical reaction in our brain that actually takes the ability of that one part of the brain and says, okay, not being used here, you guys go work over in this other area.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it just makes me wonder how we could apply that on a more sort of average person, you know, habits and life kind of situation. Like, for example, if I don't read books very often, maybe my brain will say, well, we're not using that part of the brain, so let's spend it on video games instead. You know, it's kind of interesting to think about if our brains do have this ability.
Right. That's a very good point. And maybe even the things that you're needing to learn, it's able to reassign those things as well in the different sensory departments.
Right. Okay. So particularly we're talking about people who are blind from birth. If their brains are not using that part of itself to see things and to understand visual information, well, what's it being used for? And can you retrain it? Well, we're going to find out today. So we're continuing our reading at the bottom of page 32. Please join us.
The Amazing Brain. But scientists have long believed that the brain's adaptability is limited by early conditions. When a person is born blind, the capacity of the brain's visual cortex to process sight never develops. Scientists have believed. With that lost opportunity, a window is closed, and even if eyesight were to be restored, the visual cortex, they believed, would forever remain blind to images. Not so, the current study finds. When blind subjects listened to the soundscapes that conveyed information about a visual image, they showed activation in their visual cortex. In fact, when sounds conveyed the shape of letters, subjects who had never seen a letter showed activation in a patch of the left ventral visual cortex that uniquely comes alive when people with normal vision read letters and words. With the right training approaches and technologies, the brains of people who have been blind for a long time, even since birth, might be reawakened to the task of processing visual information. For some, such training might even restore some lost vision.
So, friends, if you were in any doubt that your brain is amazing, this article will show you the truth. Our brains really are incredibly made, and they can adjust in incredible ways. And we learn from this part of our reading that they have abilities that even scientists weren't aware of until recently. And so can you explain a little bit more about that, Bill?
Okay, we start off this reading revisiting the statement of calling into question long-standing beliefs by seeing scientists have long believed that the brain's adaptability is limited by early conditions. So they have thought, well, this condition existed and that the brain won't be able to adapt or adjust because of this pre-existing condition.
Okay, so if this certain set of conditions exist, then that's going to put a constraint around what your brain can do. It's going mm-hmm. to limit it. It's going to sort of put your brain in a cage and say, okay, these are the options, that's it.
Yep.
So, for example, here we come back to this idea of someone who's been blind since they were born.
That's right. If we learn that when a person is born blind, that their capacity in the brain, in the visual cortex, the process of sight never develops. And that is what scientists have believed. So they've been limited by this early condition within the person.
Okay. So the capacity of the brain, the ability or just if the brain sort of has room to do this, has the potential to do this. We're talking about a special part of the brain here.
Yeah, we're talking about the visual cortex. Now, we had an article, I believe it was about a year ago, on the brain, and it talked about the different parts of the brain, and they are devoted to specific functions of our body. The visual cortex, and our readers can see in a specialized terms, is part of the brain that helps deal with what the eyes see. So the visual cortex takes the light signals that our eyes send to the brain, and it processes that into, oh, that's an apple. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a truck. All right. Well, if the people have been blind since birth, that translation ability is never developed. It's never initiated. The engine's never turned on.
Right. So there's this sort of, or what scientists thought was, there's this big piece of your brain there that's made to register what you see and, mm-hmm. and sort of connect the dots and help your brain figure out what is in front of you. That just never grows. It sort of just sits there useless. But of course, we learned yesterday that actually that region would be reassigned to other duties. But then could it ever learn how to see is the question. They thought that if it doesn't begin to be developed from birth, then you're stuck. That's it. That part is just shut down for that kind of operation.
Right. That's that long-standing belief that it's a lost opportunity. A window is closed. Mm-hmm. We say window of opportunity. So if it's not turned on, that's gone. The belief was that, well, we can't activate this.
Right. So like a door shuts on mm-hmm. this part of your brain and it's just sort of gray and empty. And they thought always that even if eyesight was restored to people with this condition, what would happen?
That they would forever remain blind to images. So they would forever be unable to recognize the different images that we have around us in everyday
right.
life.
Right. So basically saying, hey, even if your eyes get fixed, your brain has already been kind of shut off from this. So how could you learn to see, you know, basically you're in a catch-22 here, right?
Yeah, and you know what? And this is hypothetical.
Right.
If sight were to be restored, that was the belief. Okay, even if you could restore sight, well, you're not going to be able to tell what all of these things are.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you couldn't see. So then the part of your brain that understands what you see doesn't work. But then mm-hmm. because that part of your brain doesn't work, even if you could see, you wouldn't understand what you see. Yeah. Right? It's like this circle of just impossibility.
The stuff might just be a blur. It might look like a cloud. Mm-hmm. And you couldn't process this and then define it into, oh, that's a truck.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. However, here's where the exciting part comes, as we see in that second paragraph starting on page 33, not so, the current study finds.
That's right. We learned that while they were doing this study, they found that when blind subjects listened to the soundscapes that conveyed information about a visual image, they showed activation in their visual cortex.
Okay, so to start off with, this idea of a soundscape. That's what we were talking about yesterday, right?
Right. We talked about how they use a device that will scan the visual image and reinterpret the regularities into sounds.
Okay. Now, a friend of mine actually does soundscapes based on different parts of the city. He'll go there with his recorder and he'll record different sounds and put them together into a track that kind of gives you this audio feel for being in that place. So that's an example of a soundscape. But here they're talking a little bit more literally about what they were using on that first day that we described, right?
Yeah, we're taking images, and these soundscapes are actually, you can actually see like graphs or charts that actually take auditory sounds of images, and they actually turn them into, you know, like bars and charts and things like that. It then is transferred into sound waves mm-hmm. that can then be fed to the brain. When you take these soundscapes then and that you feed them into the brain, they show activation in the visual cortex. So there's something about these soundscapes. Again, I'll go back to that. It's like turning the key in your car.
Yeah.
You're starting the engine.
Right. I was going to say flipping a switch on in a room, mm-hmm. you know. It kind of lights up. It goes, oh, wait a second. I know this is the part of my brain that's supposed to be used for this. So they went, oh, wow, this person who's never seen anything, when they get this information represented in an audio way, that correct part of the brain is being activated. It's amazing.
It's like the cortex itself is able to recognize that audio wave.
Mm-hmm. And so, for example, in fact, we see there in line 7, what kinds of examples?
Shapes of letters. And then we see that subjects who had never seen a letter showed activation in the left ventral visual cortex of the brain. And they saw that it uniquely comes alive when the person with a normal vision read letters and words.
Okay, so this is, again, a really fascinating step here because not only is the visual cortex lighting up here, we get even more specific than that.
Right, we see in a patch of the left ventral visual cortex. So there's a certain part of the visual cortex that processes this. It's part of a larger process of vision.
Okay, so when a person who is seeing, who has grown up reading and writing, when they see letters and words, when they're reading a book, for example, there's this little part of that visual cortex that lights up, that comes alive. And they compared those normal people, or quote unquote normal, with people who are visually impaired. And they went, oh, look at that. It's the same part of the brain. They're using the same part of this visual cortex.
Yeah. And how to carry on with the example I came up with here. Okay, the soundscapes are activating this visual cortex. It's turning on the key of your car, right?
So
it's starting the engine. Now what is happening with the people that have never seen it, seen a letter, the activation in this patch, now imagine then the radio is being turned on. So mm-hmm. the car engine's on, then this other little thing is turned on then. So, and that is actually helping the person then to process, what is this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty amazing. And just that your brain already knows this is a letter, and so this is the part of your brain that deals with that, even if it never has before. It's absolutely incredible to me. So that means, as we go on to the next paragraph, that there's a lot of hope.
That's right. It says with the right training approaches and technologies that the brains of people who have been blind for a long time might be awakened. And so they're saying that just with training and education and technology, that the people that have had this problem will be able to have hope to be reactivated in their visual cortex.
Okay, so this is going back up to that previously understood or believed idea that even if someone who had been blind since birth was suddenly able to see, they couldn't understand it. Well, now they're saying, wait a second, that looks like it's not true at all.
Yeah, it's again, it's casting doubt on that long-held belief. I want to mention something. When there are long-standing beliefs about something, which was true about vision, that also affects future research because people might say, well, it's not possible.
Right.
We're not even going to go there. Let's devote our resources to something else. We've already decided this can't be changed, so let's just design a whole new, you know, different study, or let's not spend money or time on this thing.
Right.
Yeah. And fortunately, the researchers at Hebrew University still were experimenting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. This makes me think of, just to carry to sort of another example, if someone lost their leg in an accident and you said, okay, we want to give you a prosthetic leg so you can walk again, but they never were able to provide physiotherapy for that person to learn how to use the prosthetic, well, it would be pointless. So here we're kind of doing the same thing with this idea of vision being restored. Well, if we are able to do the science part of just getting your eyes to work, can we connect it with the brain? Can we reteach you how to see? And it sounds like it's very, very hopeful. That idea that the brains can be reawakened to the task of processing visual information.
That's right. And I think it's interesting if they, you know, they continue to train and use the technology to help people with their sight, that in such training might even be able to restore lost vision that people have had in the past.
Okay, so the study's authors are saying this, the potential for this is even bigger than you can imagine, really. Like, this could be the difference between someone seeing and not seeing.
That last sentence there, as far as, okay, going from this to the next thing, because what we're talking about is people receiving soundscapes.
Right.
Okay, they are not seeing. They're not visualizing the actual image. They're receiving soundscapes, and then they're converting that into images. This last sentence then is moving on to saying, well, this might in some way lead to the people actually opening their eyes, looking and seeing the truck.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, that sounds still impossible despite the study's research, but we actually have an example of a case where it seems to have happened. So let's read about that.
Sight restored. In fact, a 2008 study first offered tantalizing evidence that scientists were wrong in their long-held belief that a congenitally blind person could never have normal vision, even if eyesight were restored. A young Indian woman, identified only as SRD, was born blind of dense congenital cataracts, but her vision was restored when she was 12 at the Iladevi Eye Clinic in Ahmedabad, India. 20 years after she regained her eyesight, a team from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology discovered this rare instance of a congenitally blind person whose vision was restored and tested her extensively to see how she saw. SRD's sight was virtually normal, though the MIT team found that she did not use certain cognitive tricks that most sighted people use to make sense of conflicting visual cues.
So, although this most recent study has definitely been a breakthrough, we discover that, in fact, it's not the first study to offer some clues that this could be possible.
Right. We learned that in 2008, a study first offered tantalizing evidence that perhaps the scientists were wrong.
Okay. So, tantalizing evidence.
Tantalizing means something that is exciting, intriguing. Gets your curiosity up, says, ooh.
Yes, I think of Instagram pictures of delicious dishes at various restaurants can be quite tantalizing. I think, ooh, I want to try that. If in this case, of course, this tantalizing evidence that maybe scientists were wrong about, well, if you're blind, then that's it. If you're born blind, there's no hope. This idea that someone could never have normal vision, even if they had surgery to fix their actual eyes because of the connection with the brain. We see that this evidence, it's pretty fascinating.
There's a young woman we see in line 24, a young Indian woman identified only as SRD, and she was born blind of dense congenital cataracts. So, and cataracts are just an area of the eye that changes. It becomes unclear. Usually this happens as people age.
Right.
You know, older people will have cataracts, but they can be removed, but if they are very severe, it will cause the person to not see well or be blind.
Okay. So first of all, she's identified only as SRD, probably because she hasn't consented to publish her name. And so maybe they're just referring to her initials or a code name or whatever, so that she maintains some anonymity, some she doesn't have to be too famous because of this, which I understand. So SRD was born with these cataracts. And in many parts of the world, if a baby was born with this kind of issue, there would be technology available to probably adjust the situation right away, right?
That's right. But we see in this instance, she was already 12 years old when they needed to work on her vision.
Right. Probably she was born in a low-income family, maybe in an area that didn't have much technology. And so this is kind of an unusual situation because many people, if they're born blind, don't have any kind of hope for a surgery that would correct it later on in life.
Yeah, certainly, you know, financial resources weren't there, maybe technology not there. Many cases, they'll just say, well, you got to live with this.
Right.
What a difficult thing to live with, because then she was blind until she was 12, and then her vision was restored.
Right. They visited an eye clinic, and so there was hope. Suddenly, they said, oh, wait, we can do an operation on this. This is fixable, which must have been quite a moment for her. But then what happened? I mean, if the scientists had this idea that, well, then she wouldn't really be able to see, what was the point of doing the surgery? Did it have any good consequences for her?
It did, and it continued to be that way. But it's interesting that people didn't discover that until 20 years later.
Okay, so her vision was restored. And I guess the people working at this eye clinic didn't really think too hard about it and the consequences of this kind of situation. But 20 years later, one team thought, wait a second, that happened to her? Let's study her. Let's find out exactly what happened in this case.
Yeah, we see that their team from Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, discovered this rare instance of a congenitally blind person whose vision was restored. So somewhere along the way, it got communicated to them that, hey, there's this young lady in India that we did this to. Makes me wonder right now, how many other people did this clinic do this with?
Right. Yeah,
and
because
we don't know about.
They weren't really thinking in terms of, is this some sort of groundbreaking research or something? Mm-hmm. They were just trying to help people. But this team from MIT discovered this case, and of course they wanted to test her extensively.
Extensively meaning thoroughly, and widely, broadly, in great detail. So perhaps that's why she wanted to keep her name just as SRD. But when they do a lot of tests, and so it's not always pleasant, but it does bring breakthrough for other people in the future.
Right. And so in SRD's case, we see in that final paragraph, her sight was virtually or pretty much altogether normal.
Almost normal, just like anybody else that was born with normal eyesight. Though the MIT team found that she did not use certain cognitive tricks that most sighted people use. And when we say certain cognitive tricks, our brain is actually able to take certain situations. We can take multiple sources of input and stimulation, and then we can sort it out, right, and make sense of things that are very confusing.
Right. And so I think of just being in school and kind of learning how to study, learning how to take notes and learning how to remember things, memorize facts for a quiz. You use all kinds of cognitive tricks as you're going through high school and college to try to make sense of all this information.
Right. And I think it's interesting that sighted people do that very differently to people that have been blind, and they need to use their other senses to know what or to make sense of what's in front of them.
Right.
Well, I'm even thinking of on a day-to-day basis, just consider being at like a major intersection in your city and all of the different stimuli that you have. You've got cars moving. You've got the subway moving overhead, people walking. Then you've got all of these sounds. You've got cars and horns and talking. You've got smells. And so you've got all of these different conflicting visual and other sensory cues. And without her processing it, it could be a little confusing.
Right. And I think of also things like those optical illusions that we sometimes see in newspapers or in puzzle books. And, you know, they'll say something like, which rectangle is the bigger rectangle? But because of the way it's lined up, it's hard to tell. And just sort of depth perception in general, where sometimes it's hard, a little bit hard to tell which object is closer to you than another one. These are the kinds of things where I can imagine someone like SRD might struggle quite a bit. She might not have all of those tricks that we all have to make sense of that kind of thing.
Sure. You know, just think of, again, in our daily going around, she would have problems processing, okay, which cars are coming faster, which cars farther away, who's coming in what direction, and how it would impact her is, can I cross the street safely? And because of not processing it, it could be a dangerous, even life-threatening situation.
Right. So it is definitely a situation where there would have to be a lot of therapy. And it sounds like this woman didn't really have too much of that. And yet she still did quite well. But you do wonder, it's a little bit like someone who maybe has a learning disability, where they're very bright, but they need to learn in a slightly different way from other people.
Certainly her situation was better than what it was up until she was 12 years old.
Definitely.
Yeah.
All in all, I think this article is really exciting, offers a lot of hope for a lot of people, and a lot to understand for us. So thank you for joining us for these last couple of days, and we'll see you again soon for a brand new article from Advanced. But until then, this is Naomi,
Amanda,
and Bill
saying goodbye.
Goodbye.